Hi, Blue Wire listeners. I'm Greg Olson. I'm excited to partner with Blue Wire to bring you TE1, a podcast where I interview the tight ends who have revolutionized the position. Listen in as I have raw, in-depth conversations with the all-time greats like Shannon Sharp, Tony Gonzalez, Travis Kelce, and George Kittle. We'll explore how the tight end position has changed over the last 60 years and what it takes to be the very best. Subscribe to TE1 from Blue Wire Studios today so you're ready for the August premiere.
And here's Fox creeping forward. He pulls up, 18-footer. De'Aaron Fox puts the Kings on top. Fakes once, fakes twice, gives to Belly. 35-foot three for the win. Nemanja Bjelica.
We deserve this win, man.
When we're done, we go chop it up, eat, right. Golf, whatever you want to do. Before these 48 minutes, I ain't about them games.
Welcome back to another episode of the King's Pulse Podcast. My name is Brendan Nunes. Got Rich Ivanowski on in here as we usually do. What's going on, Rich? How you doing, man?
Oh, I mean, I'm not doing well. That's certainly definitely not happening. The Sacramento Kings have been in shambles for their first two bubble games, but you know, look, we're going to podcast today about something very, very different. We're going to talk about basically every other team in the league, as well as the Kings, but this is going to take our mind off the pain and suffering. We've got two fantastic guests on today to talk about draft picks. We're doing an entire mock draft. You probably won't hear all of it in this episode, but about the full first round. And I want to introduce Bryant West to the show first. Bryant, a frequent guest. How are you doing today?
I'm great, guys. Thanks for having me on. Been looking forward to this for a while.
Absolutely. And we got a doubleheader here. Nate Miller joins us as well. These are our two draft guys. You guys have been on together before as well. We got, it's a full house. It's a draft of Palooza today. How are you doing, Nate?
I'm good. Looking forward to it. I think my old line is, maybe I'm a Kings fan first, but that sort of just means you're an NBA draft fan.
It's true. Yeah. Rich and I have definitely started to dive into the draft a lot this year and plan on doing it here on. We've done a bunch of the draft profiles on this KP feed, and yeah, going through this entire first and second round mock is definitely going to be fun and a good thought exercise where we split up the four teams between all of us. And Rich, you kind of headed breaking this up and laid it out for us. You want to dive into how we're really doing this for him?
Yeah. So like I said, we divided up the entire draft. Each of us has 7 or 8 teams, and each of us has exactly 15 picks. Took some complicated mathematics that I won't get into right now to figure out how that all breaks down. Also, everyone is evenly divided in terms of basically where they're picking in the draft. Everyone has, you know, for example, 3 lottery picks, 3 late second rounders, all that stuff pretty evenly distributed. So I will run down who each person is going to be picking for tonight and possibly tomorrow night. We'll see how the episode breaks up. But we're going to start off with Nate, who has got Minnesota, the LA Clippers, Atlanta, Toronto, our Sacramento Kings, Denver, and San Antonio. Myself, I've got the Golden State Warriors, the LA Lakers, Charlotte, Utah, Chicago, Milwaukee, Portland, and Dallas. Bryant is controlling the Knicks, the Pacers, the Pistons, the Heat, the Wizards, the Nets, and the 76ers. And Brendan, you will be taking on the Cavaliers, the Grizzlies, your Boston Celtics, OKC, New Orleans, Orlando, and Phoenix.
Complete coincidence that I ended up with Boston.
Definitely, yeah. We definitely didn't plan that.
Toto didn't make me swap.
we're going to be trying to put a relatively tight timer on each pick. 3 minutes apiece. We'll see how that plays out. Just before we dive right in, any general comments that either Nate or Bryant, either one of you just want to chip in as far as just what this draft might be like, or, you know, how this draft class looks in general?
I think a good programming note is to mention that this is just a straight draft order. It's no lottery has not been factored into this. So I think that's a good thing to go off the top. But I think it's been well documented.
Yeah, I would just kind of add that, you know, I think we don't really know what next season is going to be like, both in the NBA, the G League, you know, what the budgets for these teams will look like. Will teams try to keep their rosters trim? So, you know, I don't want to give away my draft philosophy in the second round or anything, but I do think that, you know, I felt like we saw last draft that there was a lot of buzz about teams kind of pre-negotiating with players, whether they were willing to take two ways. And then in the first round, even Chuma Okeke, you know, he signed a deal that just made him play in the G League and instead of even starting his rookie scale contract. And so I'm kind of wondering if there's going to be a little bit of that maneuvering as teams kind of just watch, you know, the amount of money they're spending on that back end of the roster and the developmental side.
Yeah, I know you're chomping at the bit for part two of this episode already, Nate. I know the second round is where you thrive. I think did you have any final thoughts on this first round, Brian? I think you may have got cut off briefly. And again, we're going to probably be – this is our first time doing a podcast of this length with this many people, so bear with us. But, yeah, you brought something up that's important, Bryant. This is a straight-up no-lottery order, and we're taking the order that was before we started any games in the bubble. So this is the order that we've been working with for months. And obviously no trades. Any other thoughts there, Bryant?
No, I just think it's important to note that, you know, this is a very weird draft in terms of talent and in terms of how the world is going around right now. So it'll be definitely interesting to look back on this in 3 months when we're having a NBA draft in October and see how much the thought about all these players that we're going to be picking right now has changed.
Absolutely. All right, boys, are we ready to get into it?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
All right. First up on the clock, it's me. I control the Golden State Warriors, and the pick is in. I've got the choice here. It's a relatively controversial choice, but I also think that every pick at number one, especially for the Golden State Warriors, would be very controversial, would be relatively controversial. There's not a consensus number one overall pick in this draft. And I also think it's pretty relatively evident that the Warriors could have a desire to trade down. And if I was in, you know, if this mock involved trades, you betcha, I'd be very aggressively trying to use this number one pick to add another veteran to the Golden State roster, but that's not an option for me. So I'm just going to get my pick out on the table here, and I'll give a very brief reason, but I'm going with James Wiseman, number one overall for Golden State. It's not going to be – this is no one on draft Twitter will applaud this pick, but he was the consensus number one guy out of high school, didn't really play much since then. But he's a very raw, very high ceiling prospect. I would say, you know, arguably the highest ceiling in the entire draft if it all truly works out. Just the size, just the standing reach, the fluidity for his size. And yeah, last point here is that the Warriors, I mean, they need a center. That's probably their most glaring hole. So if they're gonna pick someone at one, I think that this is the way to go.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see where you're coming from there. Upside, obviously, a team that, you know, they're looking to win now, but I think Wiseman will come in, be a decent rim protector out the gate. And then you also do have the potential of him reaching that point Nate, what are your thoughts on Wiseman going one while I kind of over my second pick for the Cleveland Cavaliers?
I mean, I think you take a look at the front court they rolled out this season. I mean, obviously Green is your small ball five. You know, Pascal had a really great rookie season. He's kind of a four. And then you got Bender, you know, Chris Looney, who was injured, and Smiligich. I don't really know how to pronounce his name, but you know, they just don't really have a guy that's you'd even consider like a top backup center. So I that's not the center I would go with. I think I'd go with Okongwu. I think they have a little bit of, you know, I do think that they're comfortable playing with some smaller bigs. But I could also see them going with Wiseman if they just like his measurables and you know, I know he has seen David Robinson as his own personal, you know, a guy that he wants to pattern his game after. You know, the sample size in college was really small, but you know, if others have said that his fit is a little bit more like a DeAndre Jordan or even a Clint Capella, that could probably work pretty well in the offense if they were just really comfortable with, I don't know, basically getting any level of production out of him within the primes of their, you know, top three players.
Yeah, and I'm ready here with the second selection for the Cavs. I actually would have gone Wiseman. I was expecting him to be on the table. Instead, I'm going to go for Anthony Edwards here of Georgia. I think he's another one of the ridiculous high upside guys in this draft and seems to pretty regularly be within the top three and often even that top spot in a lot of mocks. Just obviously a great athletic build to him with some great bounce, a quick first step. I think that he works decently off the ball, but mostly you're getting a lot of on-ball shot creation that maybe there's some issues with efficiency, and I would have liked defensive floor raiser for a terrible Cavs team, but really, I mean, don't have all too much going on from them outside of their two guards in Sexton and Garland. And yeah, Edwards, you maybe would hope for a little bit of a bigger wing, but just going upside here for the Cavs at number two.
Yeah, I think that's the right pick. I know that Darius Garland and Colin Sexton make this kind of a really interesting fit versus BPA argument when it comes to wherever the Cavs end up picking. But I definitely think in the top of this draft like this, Anthony Edwards would make a ton of sense for Cleveland just because he's, to me, the highest ceiling player in this draft. I would really hope that Cleveland's developmental staff improves over the next year. I know it's been a very rocky year for that entire organization, but I definitely don't think they could go wrong taking the best scoring prospect in the class. And I think that Anthony Edwards offers some versatility that could fit well with whichever one of those point guards becomes the leader of the future.
Yeah, I like the pick. I definitely like the pick. Edwards is my number one overall personally on my big board for the year. I think that's kind of found money at number two. You can make arguments for other players, but, you know, Lonzo is the other guy that I have close up there with Edwards, but there's just too much redundancy there with Sexton and Garland. So, LaMelo Ball. Yeah, LaMelo is the other guy you can consider there, but obviously he's going to need the ball in his hand a lot, and I think there's too much redundancy with Garland and Sexton. So better to get the big, strong guy in there that can, you know, at least play on the wing a little bit more. That's about it from me. Up next on the clock, Nate, are you ready with the Minnesota pick?
Yeah. So I'm going to take one of the names I mentioned with the third pick. The Minnesota Timberwolves will select the freshman center out of USC, Onyeka Okongwu. You know, I think he fits that productive energy big. You know, he was a really good shot blocker. You could raise some questions about his poor rebounding percentage in comparison to the position, but I think you have to recognize he also shared the floor with another big. And so that kind of limited at least the percentage, even if his counting stats still looked good there. I think ultimately the Timberwolves are kind of they're a tough team to really pick what you think direction they would go. I mean, I look at it like you got Russell and you have Towns, and you just have to find the pieces that fit within them. They at least have some developmental prospects and Colburn, Okoji, and they liked, I think, what like Naz Reid gave as like a backup center. But so really for me, it was kind of the best prospect from the two to the four. I think Okongwu and Towns would actually produce a pretty good defensive combination with stretchability for both of them, even if you would, you know, definitely rely on Towns for most of the stretch options. Other than that, I think I was kind of really ranking, you know, Denny and Haliburton as two other good options if he wasn't available. I really do think that they're going to look for players that really help enhance the skills of Russell and Towns.
I absolutely love this pick. I know that there's going to be a lot of people who are clamoring for LaMelo Ball here, but I have Onyeka Okongwu second on my overall big board. I think he'd be an absolute fantastic fit next to Karl-Anthony Towns. He'd really give that team the defensive anchor that they so really, really need. And I think that'd be one heck of a big man core to build with for the next 5 to 10 years. So I really like that pick.
Yeah, I definitely was expecting LaMelo to go here. I know Rich has been a fan of the Cat Onyeka pairing, and I definitely see why there. And yeah, I mean, LaMelo, I'm definitely shocked to not see him go here. I understand it. I think it's going to be really interesting considering the next picks, the Hawks. They clearly have their lead guy in Trae Young as well. But I don't know. You like that pairing, Rich? I've seen you go to that one before.
I definitely have. Although recently I'm falling a little bit out of love with Yeka. It's not so much that. It's just that I think he's in a tier that is just pretty deep. Like, generally speaking, consensus wise, Ball and Edwards kind of stand out. And then, you know, I picked Wiseman first, who is getting love in that area, but it's more of like, you know, a lot of experts expect NBA teams to consider him up there. But, you know, even for myself, he's outside of this tier of like, 2 through 8, and there's a lot of guys in there, and I could just see Onyeka moving up and down and anywhere kind of in there. My only concern for Minnesota is that while Towns is a great stretch option, he also kind of needs to feast inside at times as well. So recently I have been looking more at complementary guards, like another combo guard to work with D'Angelo Russell perhaps, but really you can't go wrong, and anyone that is going to add defense to that team, you can't go wrong. So I don't mind the pick at all. And it's actually going to go back to Nate again now, this time for Atlanta. Have we given you enough of a rest here to make that pick?
Yeah. So with the number 4 pick, the Hawks will select Isaac Okoro, freshman wing out of Auburn. One of the things that stood out to me when I was kind of doing a little data dive comparing a lot of different players was just how strong he is as a slasher and how strong he is at getting to the line. The weird part about that, for someone that scores that way, he could rebound a little bit better. I think I'm just not entirely sure what the Hawks would do. Aside from, I don't see Ball as a guy that they're going to want, because I don't think they want to take the ball out of Trey. And Toppin's a little bit too much. You know, like John Collins. So that sort of takes him out of there. I think Killian Hayes and Haliburton are also good fits, but maybe they need the ball a little more. And so it really felt like when you have to build your offense around Trae Young, you really know that you need to have strong defenders. And if they surround him with Okoro, Herder, Reddish, and Hunter, and only half of those guys hit, then you still have two of your starters on the wing. And so I was leaning there. If he was available, it felt like Anthony Edwards, the other wing from the state of Georgia in the lottery, felt like a guy they would target. I think a dark horse pick could still be like Denny or Haliburton. Again, another guy that kind of serves as a conduit to their other stars.
Yeah, wow. I definitely like the pick there. I'm sure that Bryant does too. Bryant's a big Okoro guy, admittedly. And I want to ask your thoughts on LaMelo, Nate, because obviously a lot of guys would have considered LaMelo for one of these two spots, but I understand your fits with the other two selections. Are you finding yourself like lower on LaMelo than most guys? Do you kind of have him in the same tier as these other ones?
Well, so I think there's a part of me that is really intrigued if LaMelo's career is a little bit like late career Sean Livingston. You know, a guy that can lead a second unit, is just kind of shooting over smaller guards. And I know that seems like a bad outcome, but we're talking about a champion. And then obviously I think that you, when you're talking about LaMelo Ball, you're still talking about the family, the fit, the kind of wanting to rise up in the bright lights. And so there's a couple teams in the lottery that lower down that kind of feel like they're a little bit better fits. And it just does seem like to me that this might be a situation where once the lottery actually happens and the list of players are lined up, that his agent's probably going to really try to position him toward the right team rather than the right slot.
Yeah, it's interesting that LaMelo is falling. I do think that next, even three teams on the board could all use a point guard, so I don't know if he will continue his fall very long. But just to touch back on the pick of Okoro at four for Atlanta, I know Bryant is with you. You know, you guys are coming in here, guests of the show, loving Isaac Okoro, and I get it. I mean, I'm honestly on an island because Brandon loves him too. He's going to be – I'm genuinely worried about his shooting. I think that everything else about him is very desirable, but I do struggle to see a guy that is genuinely a bad shooter how he's going to succeed in the NBA with those types of expectations for, you know, a top four pick.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I think – I will say – again, it's not the best argument against that, but he did have 101 at rim makes this season, which was really, really solid for a perimeter player. And, you know, to kind of argue for your point, it's fair to say, did he get that? Was he be able to be that successful just because he's basically a grown man, like he just has an NBA body? And will those advantages go away when he gets to the league? But I think on that Hawks roster, I don't think he'll be expected to be a go-to scorer. And I mean, I feel like he'd even be only the fourth or fifth option even after a couple of years. It seems like, you know, Reddish might be ahead in the pecking order, for example. So I think ultimately this draft's going to be all about fit and what really aligns with team needs.
Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball and basketball is finally kicking off this week, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champion, we'll go with six-time NBA champion, Robert Horry. See what they had to say and what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.
Well, the discussion of LaMelo leads perfectly into my debate here, because I'm sure in this situation, the Ball family would be begging Detroit to let him slip one more pick to New York. But for Detroit, I've got to take LaMelo here. Detroit really just needs star power. They don't really have anybody that is going to be a top, you know, two-player on the championship team in a couple of years unless Blake Griffin can magically get healthy. And I think this is a clear fit for them. They really need a point guard. so that they can stop pretending that Derrick Rose should be on their roster. They really need that lead guy in the future. And at this point, LaMelo Ball is clearly the best player on the board to me. I've got him third on my personal big board. I know that there's a lot of people out there that have him first or second. But in terms of just an individual skill in this draft class, I don't know that anybody has a greater singular skill than LaMelo Ball's passing. We can say all we want that, you know, Australia, the Australian League is a dynamically difficult league. And, you know, he was getting such a high usage rate and being allowed to take whatever shots he wanted. But there's certainly nothing that can take away from that passing ability. He's just an absolute great playmaker, a great ball handler. And if he really works on that jumper as well as his brother did, I think that he's going to be an excellent point guard for many years to come.
Yeah, I think that pick was a pretty easy one to make. I definitely agree with that one. I'm surprised to see LaMelo following, and I'm sure Detroit's very happy to end up with him there. And then I think this is where, at least for myself, I start to reach another tier of guys, like kind of Rich talked about, where, you know, I also understand going fit a little higher, but this is where, to me, there's just a pool of guys that are all probably ranked about similarly for me, that starting with New York here can kind of pick from.
Yeah, I got back-to-back picks, so I can just pick for New York. I'm sure that the Knicks fans are really pissed off that LaMelo Ball went right before them, but I think Killian Hayes would be an excellent consolation prize for them. He's the best player available, in my opinion. They clearly need a guard with actual playmaking and scoring abilities, and Hayes is just too good to pass up at this point. I think that his best outcome would be if he went somewhere where he could be both an on and off ball guard and not have to control the ball 100% of the time. That certainly isn't New York right now, because they don't really have any other guards that I consider long-term fits for that roster. But RJ Barrett will demand a certain amount of usage with the ball, so I don't think that's terrible. And Mitchell Robinson would be really good at helping Killian get used to NBA defenses and know that he's got somebody in the back to cover up his mistakes. So for New York, I know that there's a couple other guys they could consider here. I know you guys selected Obi Toppin last time. He might be a good fit if they didn't have a bajillion other power forwards. And if Killian was off the board, I'd seriously look at Cole Anthony. But for me, this is a clear, easy selection.
It's interesting. I'll say, I really like Killian Hayes. And I think that he's probably going to be a better player than a couple other point guard types on the board in Tyrese Haliburton and Cole Anthony. And there's not, I mean, you get down to Kyra Lewis as well, I suppose. But I also have questions about Killian's ability, like how he's going to translate to the NBA. He's got this big frame, but the more that I've watched him, the more I've started to question his athleticism. And while the shooting form, this is something that's kind of common in Europe, guys that have been playing pro ball for so long, the shooting form looks so good, but the numbers aren't necessarily there. On the flip side, just what an incredible passer that this guy is. And what an incredible off-ball defender. He could be so, so good. I, for whatever reason, maybe it's just my weird obsession with the types of players that New York would pick, but I just feel like he's maybe not flashy enough to be a New York pick. But I don't know why. It just is odd to me.
I definitely get the flashy part. And I honestly feel kind of bad selecting him to New York, because there's not going to be a place that will more hyper-focus on him when he struggles next year. I think he's more of a pick that you make expecting his ceiling to show in a couple of years as he really adjusts to being in a league where he is a below average athlete. But he's such a, I don't know if fluid's the right word, but he's He's really crafty with the ball in his hands, and he's got such a great change of pace step that I really think that in a couple of years, he's just going to be one of those guys that gets by on craft, by passing instincts. And if there's an argument for his shooting ability, it's in his free throw percentage of 87.6%. I think there are a lot of indicators that he can be a solid shooter, especially off the dribble. So I think he's too good to pass up at this point, but I also think that I agree with you that he's not really a New York type of pick. And in a year, we might be all talking about how he was a bust if he went to the Knicks, but I think in a couple of years, he might be a really good selection, especially in this range.
I have a lot of options here. It's going to be my pick, number 7 for Chicago. Nate, what are your thoughts on Hayes as I make my final selection here?
Yeah, no problem. When I was, again, doing just kind of some data comparison among kind of archetypes, you know, put every player in an archetype, and when I got to Hayes, I really kind of moved him from ball handler to kind of like primary scorer who's next to a more traditional distributor. And I think either way, he kind of looks good. I know that the general consensus is that he's your primary, you know, your big as a big guard. I'm a little concerned about maybe his athleticism not really being there and that he would benefit by another athletic distributor next to him. I do think, I know you were trying to come up with the right words that he described. And, you know, when I was kind of looking at his type, he reminded me of Brandon Roy. And again, Brandon Roy was knocked for not being that athletic, but he was crafty. I know another name that was thrown out was SGA. And I think SGA, I kind of feel like you almost think about him as slippery. You know, he's often been called a point guard, but this season he's playing with two other point guards. So I think he is a guy that can create. Goran Dragic has been thrown out a lot. I think he's taller than that, and I think he provides a little bit more value there. But, you know, it's still good. He's a productive, you know, player overseas. The French league is probably at worst, I don't know, considered maybe the fourth best league, something in that range. The fit with the Knicks is rough. Aside from Kristaps, they don't have a real the organization just doesn't have a real big history drafting international players. So I always sort of in my head kind of shy away from internationals for them. By kind of like vibe. You know, Maxi kind of might seem like a Knicks player. Obviously, Cole Anthony seems like a Knicks player. I think at the end of the day, they're going to somehow find their way in getting LaMelo Ball. And I could be wrong, but that's just how I feel today.
I agree with that one. Yes. I think that there's no better end to this draft than LaMelo Ball going to New York, which is why I really considered skipping Detroit's pick and just letting him fall to New York, because that would be a fun outcome.
I mean, it is interesting to see if the Pistons are ultimately do select above them, if they're able to extract some value out of the Knicks, maybe that their second first rounder, maybe that's not enough, but you know, the Pistons need help everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I honestly believe that just is written in stone somewhere that LaMelo will be a Knick. It just seems too perfect. But in this case, it's Killian Hayes. I think it's a very reasonable pick. I can't delay any longer. The reason that I think I've had additional considerations for Chicago here is because, you know, there's a lot of questions about what pieces on this roster are going to stay. I saw some reporting, don't know how real it is, that Zach LaVine isn't thrilled about losing so many games. And then there was questions earlier in the season about how happy Lauri Markkanen was there and, you know, how much this change in the front office is going to quell those concerns if he really is, you know, recommitted and good to go. Apparently teams, you know, again, allegedly have been inquiring about Lauri and even Wendell Carter Jr. That's kind of like the whole core of this team that could maybe be a little more up in the air. I had originally thought, you know, you've got Otto Porter there for one more year. Just grab a point guard and someone that could play alongside Zach LaVine, maybe with some low usage. I actually was really drawn to Killian Hayes for that reason. But now it's kind of up in the air. This team could look like anything, really. So I'm going to go with a pick that is pretty safe and feels like could fit into any configuration of whatever members of this roster stay and go over the next few years. And it's Devin Vassell. I think that he, you know, can play the two or the three. You can work, you could move LaVine down to the one, I guess. I mean, he's got the ball in his hands so much anyway. Have Vassell play the two, have Porter play the three. Or it's also a team that has so many young guys. I could see them just getting a veteran point guard to kind of run the show and let LaVine play the two, Vassell play the three. You got Laurie and Carter at the four and the five. But ultimately, the reason I'm making this pick is I'm just very, very, very foolishly high on Devin Vassell. So that's the pick.
That's three Georgia natives in the first seven.
Yeah, I'm not surprised to take Vassell. He's one of those players who can really fit anywhere. And that's a good thing for Chicago. They have a lot of pieces that could be moving, and Devin Vassell would fit with whoever's still there.
Yeah, like Rich was kind of saying, it's a guy that fits in no matter what direction they decide to go, and fits in a lot of teams that way. He's probably one of the more surefire 3-and-D guys, if not the most, in this draft class, and that's obviously a very valuable archetype of a player. I like the pick here. I thought you might have gone in a different direction, but I was expecting Vassell to definitely be gone before we started hitting, you know, the teens or anywhere around there. And sure enough, I like the pick for him here at Chicago 7.
So I'll make up for my pandering before, and I'll just get right into it with pick number 8 for the Charlotte Hornets. I wanted a center. I think James Wiseman going 1 and Onyeka Okongwu going 3 threw that out the window. I'm not going to reach for a third center. I think it's a pretty big gap. So I'm going to go with a guy that has a really high ceiling and star potential. It's Cole Anthony, number 8. Come on down. Move your stuff over a couple of hours on that bus. And going from UNC to the Charlotte Hornets, it's an interesting pick. And I think that you get these guys a point guard. Terry Rozier, you know, whatever. He's doing a job, but eventually he'll move over.
Well, Devontae Graham is pissed.
Yeah, Devontae Graham is thinking he's going to become a shooting guard now.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're doing, though. Like, I think that the philosophy for Charlotte, to me, is just kind of take a high upside guy, since they have a lot of quality role players and guys that project to be that, but don't have a guy that could be a star. And Cole Anthony is one of the few guys that, you know, you maybe could see reaching that outcome. Is that kind of your thought process with that, Rich?
Yeah, exactly. They've got a lot of good pieces. I don't know that they have a star. Like, as much as I like Miles Bridges, as good of a rookie year as PJ Washington had, like, they seem like good but not necessarily great players. And as much as I like Devontae Graham, he also just, like, is a sub 40% guy from the field. He just is kind of a bomber, and he's an old dude for a, what, second-year guy. I think he's, like, 24, 25. Like, he really came into that draft in the second round, I think 23, pretty close to 24. Looks like you've got some comments for me here, though, Brent.
I think Michael Jordan's happy with this pick. I don't know that his general manager is going to be thinking that point guard is their biggest need, but I definitely think that Cole Anthony is the BPA on my board at this point. So I'm not going to criticize this pick. It's a good one.
And do you need a little bit of time before we move on to you at Washington for number 9 here?
No, I don't. This one's pretty easy for me. The only other guy up here this high on my board isn't a perfect fit, because Washington always needs more spacers and they also need a rim protector. But just like Rich said, I'm not reaching for a center at this point. I'm going to take Denny Avdija. I'm still relatively high on him, higher than a lot of draft experts and prognosticators at this point. But if you're a believer in the new idea that we saw in the Israeli League playoffs, then this is a steal for Washington. They could definitely use another playmaking wing if they want to build their forward core around Rui Hachimura and the defensive combo of Troy Brown and Isaac Bonga. Avdija would be an excellent, it would be excellent for this team because they're fourth in the league in transition plays last year. And I think that's where he's going to be the most effective in the NBA, is definitely running as a secondary playmaker on the wing, getting up and down the court. He'll be best on a team that runs. We all know that his swing skill is a shot. And if he doesn't hit, you know, an immediate outcome for his shot, the spacing might be pretty cramped. But he's best player available on my board. Clear pick here since both the top rim protectors are gone.
I think he's, yeah, I think he's an interesting player that just depends on how the lottery goes. You could see him just going to any different team, if only because a lot of these teams this high don't necessarily have a track record of going after internationals, that they kind of either buy into a college, you know, background, or, you know, that they, you know, highly rate athleticism. And I think that's kind of outside of his shot, probably the concern. I've seen names like Dario and Ingles and, you know, Gordon Hayward is probably like, that might be the best way to kind of interpret his spectrum on what kind of outcome. He's definitely a guy that if you're not putting the ball in his hands some of the times, whether that's, you know, leading in transition after a rebound or leading your bench unit, you're probably not getting all the value of what he provides. If you're sticking him in the corner, that shot kind of might never come around because he just might not be confident with a lack of touches.
I think that's a fair point. He definitely needs to become a better shooter, or he's not going to provide number nine value even in this draft. But I'm a believer that the shooting work that he's put in the last couple months is real. I don't know that he becomes a high-level NBA shooter, but I also think that just his IQ on both sides of the court make him a higher floor player to me than I think a lot of people. So at this point, it was either him or another combo guard who could help spread the floor a little bit. And I think Denny is the right choice here.
Yeah, definitely a fan of your selection. And I probably would have taken him at 10 for Phoenix if he was on the board. And, you know, I really try to talk myself in Halliburton here. I think the two clear needs for Phoenix are a point guard and the four, someone alongside Ayton. And I try to talk myself in Halliburton. I kind of like the pairing of him and Booker. You get a little bit more point Book. And Halliburton is like a secondary playmaker when the ball gets to him there. Obviously some off-ball shooting and just smarts that you're getting from him. I liked the fit, but thinking of who they took last draft when they reached a little bit for Cam Johnson, it looks like they're kind of just going for some production now, understandably. And I think that Toppin is an interesting fit alongside Ayton, who's been an improved rim protector this year and hopefully can back up Toppin a little bit there. And then, you know, if Ayton can develop that three-point shot as well, you're stuck with a front court of two guys that are just extremely versatile offensively. And I think that this really boosts the floor that Phoenix is working with right away. It'll be an intriguing fit that they'll have some work to do, I think, kind of getting through the kinks of it. But I'm going Toppin with Phoenix at number 10 here.
I love this pick for Phoenix. I just, first of all.
Of course you do.
First of all, 10 is very good value for, you know, the guy that you could reasonably say was the best player in college basketball this year. Yes, he is a bit older. Yes, he cannot play defense, but he is an incredibly explosive athlete. And I, you know, again, I just am falling in love with the narratives of like LaMelo to New York and, you know, Cole Anthony staying in Charlotte, or, you know, staying in North Carolina. Toppin just feels like a Suns guy to me. Like, he feels like, you know, he's not as big as as strong as Amari Stoudemire, but I just want them to have like a super explosive power forward.
Yeah, I really like this pick. I probably would have taken Tyrese Halliburton only because I think he's best utilized on a team like Phoenix that already has a dominant ball handler. But I think Obi Toppin would be a great fit next to Ayton. He could help spread the floor, keep things from getting too cramped around the paint. And I think that Toppin's weaknesses on defense could be seriously mitigated by having a rim protector. And apparently, a high outcome defender like DeAndre Ayton, which is not something I expected to say 2 years ago.
Yeah, I'd say I think that we look at the Suns and you're like they need a point guard of the future. But at least Rubio is competent. I mean that Suns front court is going to be in a rough spot in a way. Just I think Oubre is injured. Sarge is a free agent. Kaminsky, they're gonna decline that contract. Same with Diallo. And then Baines is an unrestricted free agent. And actually, when I've done my just like mocks for fun, I always see Toppin as this really interesting fit for that Suns team. He did have, I think, one of the best, the highest number of at-rim makes. It was 167, which is just wild. I think he's going to be a pretty good option for that team. I think if the draft followed this path, those are the two guys I think they're kind of comparing against each other, Toppin and Halliburton.
Yeah, and it looks like you are up next with the Spurs. Are you prepared to make that pick?
Yeah, I think this might surprise. With the 11th pick, the San Antonio Spurs will select Patrick Williams. He's another freshman wing defender out of Florida State. I know that there's kind of conflicting opinions on whether he's a 3-4 or a 4-3. He's definitely raw, shot blocking, especially kind of the weak side shot blocking, seems to be his best regarded skill. I just look at the Spurs roster as it is, and then kind of their track record historically. If this was in the 2010s, I think I'd be thinking, what international player rises? But their recent kind of draft history has definitely been to prioritize athleticism. You got Murray and White and Walker and Johnson. And then after that, just their front court needs help. I think whether it's a small forward or a power forward, I think they really need someone that they're grooming for the future. Also the center position, but if Wiseman and Okongwu were off the board, like you said, with another previous pick, I'm not gonna reach for another center lower. Some perspectives you could say maybe Precious or Stewart are guys to look at for here. But I think just with kind of what type of player they've identified recently, Williams seems like the guy that I think the Spurs would go with.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I think on the recent lottery mock we did here, just Rich and I made the same selection for San Antonio, a spot that obviously you kind of trust the development team working there and one of the higher upside wings that's available in the pool here. And, I'm itching at this Sacramento pick because it feels like there's always 12 guys gone or 11 guys gone by this point. And Halliburton is on the board, and usually that's not the case. Is that who you're kind of eyeing here, Rich? And maybe we should spend a little more time talking about 11, but Sacramento's next. I'm a little antsy.
Right. Well, Nate's got this pick as well. We wanted to bring in Nate to make this pick for Sacramento because Bryant writes for the Kings, and you and I talk about the Kings and write for the Kings constantly, Brendan. Am I balling the same guy? We'll let Nate make his pick, of course, but I will say, I did a live mock draft where each person controlled an individual team just a month ago across draft Twitter, and he was the same guy that popped out of that top 12. It was Halliburton that popped out of it, so I don't know if that's a trend or if there's anything to put into that necessarily, but I guess before we swing it back to Nate for the official pick, thoughts here, Bryant?
Yeah, Halliburton would be my pick here too. That's what I'm hoping he's going to take, but we're definitely in kind of a group think mindset about Halliburton's fit for Sacramento, so I'll be interested to see if Nate disagrees with us.
All right, so I'll give you the three options I don't think is going to happen, and they all kind of fit like a type. So this crazy, fearful Twitter looks at this draft going down, and they're afraid it's going to be Pokusevski. I have any reason to believe that's true, but if the Kings were looking for the biggest swing, that's the guy. My heart, the player that I just think is very interesting, that reminds me of the flashy Kings of yore, is Leandro Morrow. I felt like the first wave of Bull Morrow coverage focused on his creation ability, but currently the kind of analysis is looking at him as ability to on the ball defense, which is clearly something the team needs. But there's no obvious reason why I think they'd pick him. I think it kind of feels like he wouldn't be the guy. And then my intel side makes me feel like Tyrese Maxey would be the guy. He's from Texas, like Fox, you know, followed him to Kentucky. Another strong point of attack defender. He's got big game production. He is one of the few players that actually rose statistically up when he was up against stronger competition. But if the draft falls this way, I do think with the 12th pick, the Sacramento Kings would select Tyrese Haliburton. He's a big guard. He would allow, really keep freeing up Fox to score. But there's this really oddball thing that I don't know a lot about, but it kind of intrigues me. So he's got great passing statistics, but he doesn't get to the free throw line. So he's not really setting up the pass. It's presumably by driving. It's kind of really an aptitude to run an offense. But something that I've been kind of playing with in my head is a player like that, is there skill really at setting up post players? Is that where that kind of like production could be seen? And if that's true, and if that's valued, having another guard, and I know this just kind of really scares all of us, just setting up Bagley for success. And clearly, you know, this team is all in on Fox and Bagley, and they need to find players that really augment that. Ultimately, and I do think another option is that maybe they sell the farm and they, you know, trade all these picks and with Buddy to, you know, in Orlando for, you know, I can't remember his name right now. Why am I,
Aaron Gordon, maybe?
Gordon. That's who I was thinking of. You know, another California native there. I think Haliburton really gives them flexibility. He's a big guard, can kind of run the bench units as well. But it would be hard. It's really hard to figure out where they would go. But I think if this was the outcome, Kings fans would be happy.
I know I would be thrilled. I think that was a perfect breakdown succinctly of the different directions this could go. I really honestly don't have anything to add. What about you, Brent?
I adore this pick. I've always thought that this would be a great outcome for Sacramento. Tyrese would be I thought that he should be more of a off-ball secondary connector type player who gets to play next to a lead dominant ball handler, and he fits De'Aaron Fox's game to a T. And I think Sacramento could definitely use more guys who offer secondary playmaking. We'd let them stop pretending that Buddy Hield is a playmaker in any form. I don't know what selecting Tyrese would mean for the Kings' current two shooting guards between Hield and Bogdanović. I don't know if that would make it easier for the Kings to justify trading one of those two guys, or in Bogey's case, just letting him walk this season. But Tyrese is the best player left on the board for me. I adore his fit next to De'Aaron Fox. I think he's a high IQ defender, if not the right athlete or size yet to be an NBA defender. It'll be interesting to see in a couple of years if he adds the necessary strength and bulk to be able to really handle secondary guards on defense. But this is the pick I'd make.
Yeah, I have nothing against that. I definitely would go Haliburton here as well. It's the last guy left in this tier before there's a tier drop off here for me. And while I do think that, yeah, it would make you forced to do something with Buddy or Bogey, I think that's a likely path already anyways. And like Brian said, like you guys have all said, I like to fit alongside Fox, and with what Sacramento's working with, I think Halliburton's definitely the pick here. And does anyone else have anything they want to get in on Sacramento's pick or choices here before I do New Orleans here at 13?
Support for the King's Pulse podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who's the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over the technology developments to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience. Listen, we all have a time where we have hurt ourselves or at least been terrified to hurt ourselves. I know I do, trimming below the waist. That's why Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. The Manscaped engineering team has spent 18 months perfecting the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created and just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. This is a premium tool with a battery that lasts up to 90 minutes, works in the shower so you can take care of your business in there if you prefer that. Also has an extremely cool LED light attached to it that illuminates the grooming areas for a closer and more precise trimming. If you're listening to me speak right now, I want you to experience it firsthand for yourself. Trim that chunk of yours. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code KingsPulse at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code KingsPulse, no space, KingsPulse at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code KingsPulse with no space.
All right, so I've had Poku here, I think, on two different mocks that we did, Rich. I like New Orleans being able to take a swing on an upside guy when they already have a ridiculous core that they're moving forward with, but I'm not going to do that this time around. I think that they really need some wing defense and some shooting, like especially, you know, they're going to be going against the bullies of the Western Conference that just have elite small forwards, and a guy that, you know, can fill that 3-and-D role at a good size of 6'8" is Sadiq Bey of Villanova. I think that, you know, obviously he's going to supply them with the standstill shooting that they definitely need to spread the floor a bit there. Maybe some tertiary playmaking, slightly a little bit of off the dribble game, but mainly for some wing defense with switchability thrown in there as well, and just able to knock down a shot, and a guy that, you know, is going to come in and be a contributor. One of the higher floor guys in this draft. So I'm going Sadiq Bey at 13 for New Orleans.
I'm sure Rich is pissed right now.
I'm very upset. I thought for every reason you described, he'd be so perfect for Portland, who just cannot find a forward to save their lives. Anyone else want to talk about this New Orleans pick? Brian, I think you got something to say.
Yeah, I think Sadiq is just going to be a safe pick wherever he ends up going. For me, I think I would have taken Tyrese Maxey as kind of a Jrue Holiday understudy slash clone. A lot of the same complaints that people had about Tyrese Maxey, they had about Jrue Holiday coming out of UCLA. His shot wasn't great. He was just a defensive first guard who people didn't know if he could play primary point. I think Tyrese Maxey would be a fantastic long-term fit if his shot improves. But Sadiq Bey is going to be a safe pick for me anywhere in the teens. So I think this is a fine selection for New Orleans.
Yeah, I will get right to it with Portland. I think they desperately, desperately needed Bey or a forward. I wrote down a list of forwards that would fit for them, and it really looked like they were going to get one. But then this flurry of Patrick Williams going early. I mean, basically every single forward that I would consider at this spot is off the board. The only other guy, and I'm, you know, I would consider going best player available here. I guess I am kind of doing that. Maxey is attractive to me, but you've just got, I mean, how many tens of millions of dollars, I'm sure it's probably hundreds of millions of dollars, you got invested in Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. And, you know, you also got guys like Gary Trent doing things. The opinions on Anthony Simons vary, but, you know, I mean, there's some promise there. And you can kind of, I believe that team could get, you know, backup point guard duty off the free agency pile. They don't need to invest in a backup point guard. So, yeah, I desperately wanted someone that could play both three and the four. I'm going to go with a guy here that I actually think can play some three. He would be better suited for a two in most lineups and for most teams. But Aaron Nesmith He's a legit 6'5 with a 6'10 wingspan. Pretty big dude, pretty strong, good frame, 215. And he's a legitimate lights out shooter. Absolutely legitimate. As far as finding a 3-and-D wing, you got at least half of it. You got at least half of it in the bank here. Neesmith is arguably the best shooter in the draft. I actually have good things to say about his defense. It's the passing and, you know, the sort of facilitating that worries me. I think he might be genuinely a bad passer, a poor awareness on offense in terms of creating for others. So I think he's going to have to finish plays. You know, you get in the ball, he can drain a three, but I do worry about how he could slow things down. If any team could go with a three-guard look for a while, I think it is Terry Stotts in Portland. So, yeah, it's going to be Aaron Neesmith here.
Yeah, I like the pick. I think, like you said, it's definitely a wing that Portland should be looking at there. And, you know, with a plus wingspan, maybe he does turn out being a decent or defender there for Portland. Nate, you have any thoughts on the Neesmith pick here before I get to Orlando at 15?
Oh man, it's funny as we all kind of probably agree that for some of the forwards, the Pelicans and the Trailblazers are the floor. I mean, Neesmith's interesting. I was really bummed that he got injured, especially since after he got injured, Sabin Lee blew up for Vanderbilt, and you know what could that team have done with those two explosive scorers? But you know, Rich is right. He is very much a finisher. I mean, his assist to turnover ratio and his assist percentage to usage percentages are really big signs of pretty much finisher only. He's a little bit in terms of role, you know, like a Rodney Hood or maybe a Gary Trent Jr. So he at least fits in a type of player that they value. He's considered one of the best shooters in the draft, so that can't hurt. I'm not really sure who else they would go. I think in terms of legit forwards on my own kind of aggregate board, it's maybe 10 players down, you know, when you get to Precious and Jalen Smith, and you know, maybe they go that direction or maybe they go with, you know, I don't think they would, but a Jaden McDaniels. Maybe they think they can really tap into his potential.
Yeah, I ultimately agree that Neesmith is the pick for Portland there at 14. And then for me, Orlando at 15, I mean, the clear hole is point guard, and it's coming down to Kyra Lewis Jr. and Tyrese Maxey, and a team that I think already is doing pretty well for themselves defensively and really needs someone to shoulder a large load on the offensive end. I'm ultimately going Kyra Lewis here. I like him a little bit better than Maxey, although it mainly does come down to the offense of Kyra over Maxey for me. I really like Kyra's versatility, obviously his ridiculous speed, and I think it's forgotten that, you know, he's just not far too off from just turning 19, even though he is a sophomore at Alabama. He flashed some nice passing this year, and the change of speed along with how quick he is just able to accelerate. But yeah, passing with left, right hand, there's some decent shooting off the dribble a bit, and then off the catch as well. I think that Orlando's going to get themselves a nice point guard here at 15, but I'm going with Kyra Lewis between my options.
Brian, I know you got a big crush on Kyra Lewis. Yeah. Tell us about it.
I definitely think that's a great pick. I know that Orlando is still very much set on the Markelle Fultz rehabilitation train, but Kyra Lewis is the clear BPA for me at this point. I really like how he fits in Orlando's crazy length system. I think he actually has a lot of off-ball versatility that might get underappreciated in this draft process. And he had a really good rate off the catch, so I think he can play next to Fultz and provide some spacing. He's not going to cramp the system, and he can be a secondary creator, which I think they need. And just in terms of taking talent here, this would be a home run fit for them, I think.
Well, if you don't mind, I think the Timberwolves are ready for to make a selection with the 16th pick, and I think they'll take Tyrese Maxey. if they leave this draft with Maxi and Okongwu, I think they'd be really happy. I think that'd give them two really strong defenders to add around two not so well-regarded defenders. And I think, I mean, I talked a little bit about it, just kind of his big game ability. I think one thing to keep in mind too is, I mean, he's a player who's probably a two guard, but he kind of had to play a lot of times out of position to accommodate Higgins and Quickly in Kentucky. And then I think that there's probably also kind of just a recent general acknowledgement that Kentucky players can often have deflated statistical production just because they're surrounded by so much talent. So I think that's the guy I would pick for the Timberwolves.
I think it's a great pick. That's an insane bounty for Minnesota to come out of this draft with. And yeah, like you said, I like that you mentioned, I think it's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a good example of that, where the numbers weren't incredible, then they get out of that super elite program and they are real, real players. But I know, Brendan, that you're excited to make your pick for your Boston Celtics here. So without further ado, why don't we let you get to that?
Yeah, I think Maxi would have been an interesting one here in a very similar to Marcus Smart type role. But Boston, with three picks in the first round, I think has the luxury of letting some guys take some time to develop. And I really think they'll look to stash one of these guys. And one of the highest upside guys in this draft, I mean, like complete unicorn, and maybe he doesn't reach that upside, but I think Boston's in a position they can really wait for him, is Alexei Pokusevsky. And I think that this is a decent value for Boston at 17. It is a home run swing, but I think with the position that they're in, they're really able to do that. And if it works out even to a moderate outcome, I mean, you have a good floor spacer with some dynamic passing ability to him as well at a ridiculous length of 7 feet. So I think they're in a position similarly to why I was taking Poku a lot for New Orleans, that they have a lot of young talent that they're waiting for anyways. You might as well kind of take a swing for the fences. And if it works out for you, then you're looking at a really serious, deep young roster.
What, no one has anything to say about Poku?
No, this is the exact type of situation where I think he needs to go. He really needs to go somewhere that isn't going to have high immediate expectations out of him. And if Boston's really going to be taking him as a project player and bring him along slowly and let him get used to the league as a, you know, 5 minute per game kind of guy, I think he's the right fit here, and just replace Taco Falls on their bench pretty much.
I do think Brendan's right though with those three picks. Just for kind of roster building, they have to stash one, if not two, players.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, man. That's gonna just, I have no idea where Poku's going to go in reality. Just no idea. I mean, really no idea. So yeah. Fantastic. I'm glad that you made that bold decision. Number 18, the pick is to me. It's the Dallas Mavericks. And I'm just going to hop in, hop out. It's going to be Josh Green. I think they just need wing defense.
I'm so mad.
No, go ahead. No, I'll let you do the analysis on this one.
Well, I wrote a whole 1,300 word article on Josh Green, thinking that now there's no chance anybody's going to take him before me. But Lord, he'd be a great fit here, somewhere where he could, his lack of offensive game could be insulated. Someone that really needs more defensive wings. Yeah, it'd be great in Dallas. And I think he's going to, in a couple of years, I truly think we could look back and see him as steal of the draft, because he's already an NBA level wing defender. And if his shot even becomes median outcome, he'll be a starter for sure.
Yeah, I think you have a really good point with, you know, this is a place that's not going to ask him to do much offensively, and they're already pretty set on that end. Yeah, I'm a really big fan of the fit Josh Green in Dallas as well. Obviously, it's a little bit of my type of player too, where it's just these hustle guys that have some big question marks on the offensive end. But I definitely like the fit here for Dallas.
All right, I'm up again. 19, Milwaukee. This was a really hard one for me. Even like making a list of the types of guys that the Bucks want slash need. I guess need is the bigger question here. They've got Bledsoe locked in for quite some time. DiVincenzo's coming on. You know, Middleton has really become a force at that kind of stretchy forward role that everybody needs. Obviously, you know, Giannis is the entire team who can play four, low four or five, and Brook Lopez can, you know, is such a unique player at the five. Also locked in on a longer contract now. I thought about taking a look at a guy like Jalen Smith, just because if any team needs a long-term guy that can block shots and shoot it, like Milwaukee is that team, but I think it's a little too early to take Jalen Smith off the board. I'm going to go with a guard here. I think that you basically you can have a guy that could pair next to Bledsoe or eventually take over if they try to move him, if he has, you know, he's just really hot and cold. So yeah, I'm going to take an oddly high floor guy in the one of the older players that is being considered in the first round. We haven't talked about it on the podcast yet, but we did research on it. Never got around to talking about this guy, but I really like Grant Riller. And I just think that his maturity and his explosive first step combined with the shooting, he really can score from anywhere on the floor. I just believe that he would fit in with this team that, you know, it doesn't need to take a big swing on, you know, an 18-year-old kid.
That's a really interesting pick. I mean, Riller, he's a guy that he's got like a 61% true shooting percentage and 70% at rim finishing percentage. I mean, it's just, even if he drops off a little bit and can give something in the mid-60s as an NBA player at his size, that would be pretty incredible.
Yeah, I definitely like the pick. I mean, I think that it makes a lot of sense for him to go to a team that's looking to contend now, since he's going to come in and give you pretty good value out the gate, probably, while not having all too much of a high ceiling that you're working with. And then I think the 20th pick here, we have Brooklyn on the clock. Bryant making that selection. You ready to do that one, Bryant?
Yeah, I am. Since Rich stole my clear pick, I thought there was no chance Josh Green would be gone before this. I'm going to steal Nate's dude here. No. Leandro Barmeaux would be a great fit for Brooklyn. He'd be a great tertiary playmaker with Durant and Kyrie. He'd be an excellent wing defender, kind of player that they could always use more of. He'd be an excellent starter level player if his shot improves. But he's that kind of high IQ, ready to go guy that I think Brooklyn could really use right now. I'm sorry I took your pick, man.
Well, it's surprising because when I look at that roster, I just think that I'm, you know, with Kyrie and Durant, that they would go for maybe like a four. You know, like a Precious or Jalen spot, a guy that just kind of like does one or two things for them. It's not really asked to do much more. But
I guess Precious makes sense in that sense. But Jalen Smith to me is locked in as a center, and Lord knows that they have enough centers taking up minutes already. And I think a team ready to go at this point, especially if they don't keep I've forgotten their wing's name, Caris LeVert. Thank you. Caris LeVert passed this summer. I think Leandro would be a solid fit in this range.
Well, I think with the, if you don't mind, I'll go with the 21st pick in the Denver Nuggets. And I'm not really sure what entirely they would do. Balmaro was probably going to be my guy. So this one really kind of feels like I'm going to maybe go with their team. You know, they go international. They look young.
Now you're going to take my guy.
No, actually, I feel like I won't be taking anybody's guy because this guy's gotten some buzz, but I'm not sure where. I'm going to say that the Nuggets will select Zeke Nnaji. They've got Paul Millsap coming up on free agency. Jeremy Grant's coming up as well with a player option. Plumlee's. And unrestricted, as is Noah Vonleh. So I think they need a guy that they can help stretch. I mean, I do think that there's arguments that Jalen Smith kind of fits those, some of these skills, but Najee's a little bit younger. He's still an efficient, you know, scoring big man. In some ways, I think he might have been the most surprising freshman of the trio at Arizona. But I for sure could see Hampton or Terry maybe being the players in this spot. But there's a part of me that's been thinking that that there's something about Najee in Denver.
Any thoughts on Najee, Bryant, as you're about to submit your pick for the Philadelphia 76ers?
I think that's a fine pick. He anywhere in the 20s makes a lot of sense for Najee. I think he's got a solid enough floor across the board. He showed enough of a shot to convince me that it was at least semi-real. He's an all right defender, really good rebounder, and he's a fun player to watch. I really enjoyed watching Arizona this year because they just had a lot of picks. I mean, a lot of talented, fun players. So I think that's an okay selection, if a tiny bit earlier than I'd taken. So Philadelphia is a little more complicated because everybody that I had mocked for Philly at this spot's already gone. So I'll just take the easy caveat with Philly and say, you know, with their roster construction around Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, they always need more shooters. So I will give them the best shooter in the class and take Desmond Bane at number 23. I'm not sure that he has an incredibly high defensive floor, and I'm not sure what he can provide at an incredibly high level besides just being a knockdown 30-foot shooter. He'll be dangerous anywhere on the floor, but Philadelphia's already got a lot of defenders and wing defenders to insulate him, regardless of how high his defensive ceiling is. So I think this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so I'll take some pressure off you because you're coming up on 23 as well. I think that was 22 for Philly. 23 will be the Miami Heat. Bane, I think, is like really kind of catching on and gathering a lot of steam and charging up the board. I'll be frank, you know, I don't know all that much about Bane. And while he's got this reputation as one of the best shooters in the league, coming out of the NCAA, he is just a guy that I feel like is just has escaped the zeitgeist of first round picks up until really this last week or two, where like I can't stop hearing about Desmond Bane.
Yeah, I think that's cool. I mean, but I'll say he's young for a senior. Obviously, he's one of the best shooters. But in addition to that, in his senior year, he really did a good job at becoming a creator, averaging almost 4 assists per game. But when you look at the advanced stats, his assist to turnover ratio and that assist percentage to usage, they're really strong. Now, I will say that, yeah, not a great defender. Wingspan's not great. It's a little stiff with kind of a football player body. And he could definitely, you know, grow as he doesn't really draw fouls. And I think you sort of see that kind of those things working together where he's not fleet of foot, not as athletic as he wants. And so he drives the lane. He really works the perimeter. Right, in that offense, that could be really good. And if they're playing both him and, you know, him on the perimeter, Philadelphia really likes a lot of big players, and that really offense set a lot of minor defensive deficiency.
All right, I guess I'm up at 23 with Miami, and I'm going to be the one that does it. I'm going to take Jaden McDaniels. I love the idea of Jaden McDaniels going to a smart organization that can make him just be one of the guys. I think if he ends up going to in the lottery or to a rebuilding team, I think he could really definitely end up being a disappointment. But in this range, I love the idea of him going to Miami. He could just work on his offensive game. Miami could utilize him as a catch and shoot guy, and they have a system to insulate project players. In this kind of scenario, I think the ceiling for McDaniels is definitely a lottery level return, but I don't trust that any of the teams in the lottery, I guess besides the Warriors, would really be able to optimize him in a smaller offensive role while lowering immediate expectations. So I really kind of hope this is where Jaden McDaniels ends up going.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's definitely a guy that needs to go to a smart development team. I think of Miami and Toronto, obviously. You're getting a decent upside, especially when you're talking in the 20s here. I think it's fairly low risk. I think that makes a lot of sense for Miami here. You have any notes on Jaden, Rich?
I mean, it's a bold pick in terms of, you know, we did a podcast together, Bryant and Brendan and I, really at least half an hour. We pretty close to half an hour we spent on Jaden Daniels, and none of us were happy about it. Bryant wrote a bunch of words, probably over 1,000 words on how not ready Jaden McDaniels is for the NBA. But yeah, we also talked about that if he goes to the right team, I think we talked about Spurs and Toronto and definitely Miami as a team that could take a kind of a hunk of clay and carve it into something very, very valuable. So I think it's a smart pick. And at least is as smart as a pick as you're going to get of Jaden McDaniels in the first round. So I commend you there. And I'm ready for my pick at number 24 for the Utah Jazz. It's a guy that I just think the Jazz probably, if anything, need a point guard of the future, considering that Mike Conley, you know, isn't working out great and is definitely in the back nine of his career. He's going to be around there for a minute, though, so you don't need a guy that's going to come in right away and be great. So I'm going to pick a very young international point guard, kind of a combo guard in Théo Maledon. I have researched him as well. We have not gotten to that episode yet on King's Pulse, but I really liked how well-rounded his offensive game is. The defense is going to be an issue for sure. The athleticism is going to be an issue, but he's very young and can grow into his body. Just a very well-rounded offensive player that I think could play on ball or off ball, which is a nice fit next to Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, you said a overseas guy, and I was definitely expecting you to pull out RJ Hampton. But I like Maledon. I think that his offensive upside is just he's a very creative guy. And yeah, every reason that you laid out, I like him there for Utah alongside Mitchell. And if I'm not moving too quick here, Hampton is the guy I'm going to take at 25 here for OKC. I think he screams Thunder, where he's just one of these ridiculously athletic guys that they seem to fall in love with a decent upside to him as well. And, you know, I think that you're getting pretty good value here at 25, somewhat similarly to McDaniels. It's a guy that going into the year you saw ranked a lot higher, and he had a very poor showing in the NBL. But yeah, I mean, I think that the upside, if you can actually grab a hold of some of that, is very real for Hampton. And OKC's in the ending stages of a team that's not going to be there for much longer, and then they're going to be in a pretty fresh rebuild working with some nice pieces like SGA. But I think that they're in a position where they kind of go for some upside here, and I think Hampton's the guy for them at 25.
That's great value that you're getting for Boston now with Poku and RJ. Like, they're just big swings. They're just huge home run swings. And
well, one was for OKC, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Okay, forget everything I just said. I know
I got Boston next.
You got Boston next. I'm sorry. So, okay, for OKC, let me just shift gears real quick. I'll just say, like, off the rip, that's fine for them too, just considering, like, they have infinity picks forever.
Yeah, the Thunder definitely seemed like a possible bid. RJ, he's young for a guy that would basically have been a freshman. Attacking off the catch is probably his best skill at the moment. There was some buzz that maybe he's a big primary guard, albeit a little mechanical. And now I think that's kind of more, he's more considered kind of a slasher, even though he's still young and he could still develop into either option. I think going to OKC is probably a good fit for him.
Yeah, and I'm ready here. Or do you want to get some in on that, Bryant?
I was just going to say that I definitely think that RJ Hampton's really a kind of a Thunder guy. They definitely have a type when it comes to wings.
Yeah, definitely scream Thunder. I was a little upset when I thought Rich took him to Utah because it seemed like a clear pick for OKC. And then, Yeah, for Boston here, a guy that I'm surprised fell this far is Tyrell Terry. I think that, you know, obviously the shooting you're getting from Terry, extremely real. There's some passing that you're getting from him as well. A guy that Boston can, you know, take their time, and maybe he ends up being the point guard of the future once Kemba is no longer there after, you know, when Kemba's contract expires. This rookie will be going into their final year of their rookie deal and maybe ready to take over. And I think Terry could be that guy. Boston's used to having to hide some of these small guards, and yeah, in a position where they can take a little bit of a swing. And I mean, I think Terry is really good value here at 26. I'm pretty surprised he fell this far down.
Well, I'll just echo my comment, which is that I think that with Boston, you're able just to take these home run swings, and Terry is one of those guys as well. Like, there are much safer options at point guard. You know, there's one that's screaming out at me, you know, just a super, super safe, high floor, but lower ceiling point guard. Boston can take all the swings in the world they want. If these guys don't turn it into anything, it's no big deal. I think that that kind of goes for OKC as well. I think you've got a lot of good teams that you're picking for that just can really take swings, like considering that OKC is, you know, what, however many future first round picks from the Clippers and all those trades as well. So I think you've got some really fun teams to pick for.
Yeah, and Bryant, you feel like New York's a fun one to pick for too?
No, because I mean, clearly the consensus pick at this point would be that Precious Achiuwa has no business being drafted this late in a mock. But it's really hard for me to look at Precious Achiuwa and select him on a team that has Mitchell Robinson. Meanwhile, just taking a cursory look at New York's bajillion big men, I will note that besides Julius Randle's mid-range shot, really isn't any big man on their roster who can actually shoot. So I'm going to stop my draft crushes slide and select Jalen Smith here. This is kind of an okay situation because I don't think he needs to immediately be a starter. And with Thibs in the coaching seat now for New York, I definitely think that he'll be looking to add more and more guys who are high IQ defenders. I definitely worry that Jalen Smith and Mitchell Robinson should never see the court at the same time because they're both definitely centers. And Jalen Smith does not have the defensive versatility that Mitchell Robinson does. But at this point, I think Jalen Smith is the highest guy on my board. But I also expect that New York would probably go in a different direction if this was a real pick.
I know Kevin Phippen is happy over at KingsHerald.com. The Jalen Smith love, like, I'm fully, fully sharing in it. I have him, like, really stupidly high on my big board. I just love – it's the same reason that I fell in love with Dwayne Dedman for the Kings. Like, you see the – you see the blocking.
Don't say that.
You see their rim protection. You see the three-point shooting, and you're like, oh, man, we got the next Brook Lopez here. But, yeah, obviously it could go very, very wrong. So a bit of a cautionary tale, I guess.
Yeah, and looking at Toronto and the Lakers as the next two picks, I have two guys in my mind I think fit both of these teams really well. Are you ready to pick for Toronto at 28, Nate?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the Toronto has some really good selections that kind of fit their template. But I constantly just think that they're smarter than us. And so, so whoever they're going to pick is going to look like they're lower ranked than consensus. And with the 28th pick, I think the Toronto Raptors will select Paul Reed, young junior out of DePaul. He's this season's stocks monster. He doesn't generate fouls on the offense and offensive end, so he's got room to grow on that side of the ball. He's kind of got a weird shot. He just seems like the kind of player that they can see the flashes, the moments in their system. The 915, their development system. It's kind of, I think that they could really bring it out in them. But you know, a Tillman, a Trey Jones, a Malachi Flynn, those all kind of seem like good Raptors-like players, but I think they might go for kind of the quirky tool set that Paul Reed brings.
I'll say I'm admittedly a big Precious guy, but I think I've been very pushy about he needs the right fit, and I like Toronto's development. And what do you like about Reed versus Precious, since I think they're actually pretty similar, and the age is a big thing that's credited there, but they're actually not all too far apart in age.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because I'm looking at those exact same things. I don't know. I mean, we don't have a combine, but they're both like 6'9", 210. I don't think the eyes kind of see that, but Paul Reed is barely, it's only a few months older than Precious. So I think, you know, I think though he's a junior, that's not much of a negative. He's a little bit better on the offensive end, at least statistically. He's got better shooting percentages, a little bit better offensive rating. DePaul didn't do as well as in the end as you know, the early results showed. But I just think that at least if their age is the same and you have all this production on Reed and you have one season on Precious, you can at least see with Reed an obvious development of his skills, where Precious takes a little bit more of your own internal, what your scouts feel, what they saw at the lower levels, that, you know, Reed just has a better resume when at least the age and the measurables are very similar.
Yeah, a lot of people I know have a crush on Paul Reed. He's another guy that I haven't delved into really, because I think he is just kind of been pigeonholed into a second round guy, and so like I haven't put a priority on looking at him compared to a guy with a little more first round equity among experts like a Precious Achiuwa. But I'm up next here at 29, and I'm going to do you a favor, Brendan, and not pick your boy Precious, so you can just go ahead and cue that up at 30 for Boston. But the Lakers, I think they really need a point guard, and I think they really need a super safe point guard. Yeah, they can go sign whatever veteran can like walk in off the street and be 33 years old and play in that system, but I think it would be really nice to get a fresh face in there. You know, one guy I considered is Nico Mannion, who has definitely a higher upside, and a lot of people are mocking him to LA in this pick, and I definitely see it as well. But I really, really, really like Trey Jones, and so much so that I, you know, just have him right on the back, right outside the lottery. He just feels like such a safe game managing type of point guard that's not going to ever need any shots. Like, he's the Lakers don't see anything other than LeBron and AD. They don't see a future beyond LeBron's retirement age. They don't care about, will this guy be a star in 5 years? That's not what they're doing with the 29th pick in the 2020 draft. I think they could use just an extra ball handler, and I think Trey Jones is about as safe as they come.
Yeah, this is definitely the guy I was eyeing for the Lakers here. I really like this fit. You want to kind of get into why you seem to be a fan too, Brent?
I definitely don't have Trey Jones in the lottery, like Rich, or near the lottery like Richard does, but he definitely seems like kind of the Lakers type of point guard, and actually the type of point guards who have excelled next to LeBron before, the guys who don't need to dominate the ball, the guys who can really make their living off of playing excellent defense and just being ready whenever the ball comes whizzing their way. Trey Jones definitely seems like a Lakers type of point guard.
Yeah, and Rich exposed me. I'm going Precious at 30. I think I just love the fit. I think that, you know, Precious, a guy that needs to be in a decent development, and I think that Boston's okay in that. Not elite like some of these other teams we've mentioned, but they really are looking for a switching center. And obviously, I think that that's where Precious can really excel. I like the defensive tools he has and just the ridiculous energy that he gives. And yeah, I mean, I think that as long as they can keep him in a big man role on the offensive end rather than him thinking he's a wing, like, sure, maybe attack closeouts every once in a while, but Precious doesn't need to be the one bringing the ball up the floor and definitely not running a pick and roll of any sorts. So I trust Boston to keep him in a good role there, and I think he's a really good value here at 30, one of the guys that definitely fell for us.
Yeah, this is a dream draft for Boston. I mean, to get an excellent fit at 30, Precious would just be fantastic for Boston's defensive needs and, you know, low usage type of player who can dominate in the pick and rolls with any number of guys. Fantastic fit here at 30.
I just wanted to ask, how do you see him over like a Tillman? Because Tillman, I at least see kind of like a type. Like, I kind of see a guy that's, you know, they're not going to expect much from him, but just gives incredible contributions. That seemed like was this a name you're going to pick?
Yeah, Tillman was a guy that was definitely right there with Precious for me. It just comes down to, I think that Precious has the higher upside. I like the switchability of him a bit better there. But Tillman was definitely in close consideration. I really like the passing that Tillman gives you. Ultimately, I just like Precious a bit better as a prospect over Tillman if you're valuing upside rather than floor. And I think Boston's kind of in that position, but they definitely were neck and neck there. And Isaiah Stewart's not all too far off, but I'm a little lower on him than those other two guys. But that's our entire first round, guys.
Yeah, I'll read through it real quick, and we'll get a last thought or two before we wrap up and send it to part two for the second round. Number one pick, Golden State Warriors take James Wiseman. Number two, Cleveland grabs Anthony Edwards. Number three is Okongwu to Minnesota. Number four, Atlanta takes Okoro. Number five, LaMelo Ball to Detroit. Number six, Killian Hayes to the New York Knicks. Number seven, Devin Vassell to Chicago. Number eight, Cole Anthony to Charlotte. Number nine, the Wizards take Denny Avdija. Number 10, Obi Toppin to the Phoenix Suns. Number 11, Patrick Williams goes to the Spurs. Number 12, your Sacramento Kings take Tyrese Haliburton. Woo! Number 13, New Orleans Pelicans get Sadiq Bey. 14, Nesmith to Portland. 15, Kyra Lewis to Orlando. 16, Maxey to Minnesota. 17, Poku goes to the Boston Celtics. 18, Dallas takes Josh Green. 19, Grant Riller to Milwaukee. 20, Leandro Balmaro to Brooklyn. 21, Denver takes Zeke Nagy. 22, Desmond Bane to the 76ers. 23, Jaden McDaniels to the Heat. 24, Theo Maledon to the Jazz. 25, RJ Hampton to the Thunder. 26, Tyrell Terry to the Boston Celtics. 27, Jalen Smith to the Knicks. 28, Paul Reed to the Toronto Raptors. 29, the Lakers take Trey Jones. And finally, number 30, Precious Achiuwa to the Boston Celtics.
I don't know how in the world Brendan did it, but Boston had the best draft here. It's a ridiculous combination.
Yeah, it was interesting that some guys definitely fell for Boston. And in general, I think it was interesting how some guys fell across the board. Like, I think Detroit at 5 is psyched to get LaMelo Ball. Sacramento getting Haliburton at 12, I think, is nice. OKC for RJ Hampton at 14. I think we definitely had some guys sliding down the boards a little bit here. And with it being such an even pool of talent once you reach a certain point, or seemingly, I mean, Nate said it at one point, I think a lot of this is going to have to do with fit. And that's why you see a little bit of some, you know, maybe risers, depending how you look at it. And like Balmaro going 20, Zeke Nagy going 21, Desmond Bane 22. So, yeah, I mean, I'm happy with how I came out with Boston, but I think some other teams are looking, feeling pretty good after this one too.
Well, I know how you did it. I know how Boston did it. They had a really good general manager that built a really good team while collecting draft assets. And then they were able to just sit back because they have no throbbing need at any position or any role. They can just sit back and take the best player available every single time. Must be nice. It must be nice. Don't know anything about that here in Sacramento. I will say for my teams, I think I was in some tough spots early, and I think that also like trying to run the draft a bit also caught me off guard, but I felt like I hit my stride later on and got guys like Josh Green for Dallas was exactly who I wanted for Dallas. I think that's a great great pick for what they need. Same for Teo Maledon and the Jazz, and Trey Jones, I think, is really good for the Lakers. So those are my teams that I think made out the best. What about you, Nate?
It's Timberwolves. I just really like Okongwu and Maxey. Yeah, it's funny when you get to post lottery, you just really start seeing the flatness of the draft. And I think when I'm looking at like the ranks I have next to these players, you know, I think Paul Reed was probably the biggest. My selection was like one of the biggest overdrafts, whereas like RJ Hampton was one of the biggest drops. And you know, that's what's going to happen in some of these areas. And I do think as a Kings fan, you do kind of want to root for Cole Anthony getting drafted high and maybe Kyra Lewis rising higher than we drafted, which could really make the drafts interesting. I was really curious if where Toppin was going to go once we started getting lower. Cause I could see a world where he's there for the Kings. But some of these athletic fours have definitely struggled or not produced as well. I'm thinking like, I'm not saying their careers are over, but you got Rui, you got Jabari Parker, you got flashback to Derek Williams. And those kind of players, you know, nothing against Toppin, have just, they've struggled for different reasons. But he could be available and we could be looking at this incredibly productive player with now, you know, potential need on the Kings front court, and he could be the guy, and maybe that could be great, but I think there would definitely be some anxiety on draft night.
Well, there's always going to be anxiety on draft night in Sacramento. That's just a yearly tradition at this point.
I'd feel pretty relieved at the end of the day though if Sacramento was leaving with Tyrese Haliburton.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I think that was the right pick for Sacramento. My favorite fit that I made tonight was Jaden McDaniels going to Miami. I love the idea of him going to that kind of system. And Miami's already one of my favorite teams to watch just because they're so rough and tumble and high IQ and built the right way. So I like that one a lot. New York was a lot of fun too. Killian Hayes seems like a good fit there. And Jalen Smith, it went 10 picks after he on my big board. So that was good to select him.
I also think you did well. I mean, you know, not really up to you, but to get LaMelo to fall to 5, that's found money.
Yeah, at that point, I definitely think that LaMelo is kind of a lock to go in the top 3 or so pick. Whether that's just because the team that needs him is sitting there or because some team wants to jump up and get him, but I definitely think he's one of the 3 best players in this draft. So Detroit fans must be loving this mock.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for listening. Please join us again for part 2 when we're going to do all 30 picks in the second round. That should be out shortly. In the meantime, please check out kingsherald.com. Local Sacramento writers writing about the Sacramento Kings. What an idea. Check out the Patreon layer there, please.
Yeah, and part 2 of this will be up in the next few days here. Sacramento's got some decent talent on the board, selecting at 35 and a couple other second rounders. But thanks to everybody for listening through this episode of the Kings Pulse podcast. And you hear from us again in the next couple of days.